This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Well, we all know, and some more than others, that COVID had a huge impact on the arts and in particular the live entertainment industry. But now that it feels like we're back at Warwick Long, you know, big bands are touring, tens of thousands of tickets are being sold for theatre shows and festivals, today we're looking at, well, how is the industry coping? Because we heard just a year ago that there was a mass exodus of those that worked in the industry.
Yeah, you could tell me it was prehistoric times. You could tell me it was just yesterday. But in 2020, Rochelle, a survey was done during the peak of Victoria's Stage 4 lockdown, looking at how the pandemic had impacted Victoria's music and live entertainment sector. We talked about it on this show at the time. We heard from many people who were leaving, many worried about the sector and would you lose years and years of decades of experience. And it was really stark at the time. There was a lot of concern about what was going to happen.
That's right, because you sort of can't learn these skills behind the scenes, in particular at university. You need to learn it on the job, and to have those people, those years, as you said, those decades of experience walk out the door. What was that going to do? So the survey at the time, now these are the numbers you were referring to, it was really confronting. 58% of the respondents said that they were going to leave the music industry.
Well, more than half.
That's right. 80% said that their involvement in the industry would be different post-COVID.
4 in 5. That's huge.
Huge. And then they also said that they wanted to see changes. So whether or not this was an opportunity to draw a line in the sand and look at things like improved working conditions, better pay, access to government grants and programs, all of these issues that were actually there before COVID. So now, not saying that we're through it, but now that the live entertainment industry feels like it's back, have any of those things was been addressed, and what are numbers looking like at the moment?
These are the people that arrive before the show and are usually there packing up once the performance has finished. So what's happened? Is music back and is it all okay now? I would love you to tell us today. And now that it feels like we're back going to bands and festivals and we're talking about events on the radio again and hearing about people playing in stadiums, wineries and different venues as well. Thousands of tickets are being sold to shows. Who's doing the work? What has changed? Who came back? Who is entering the industry? And will a new program to award scholarships to crew care help the future of the industry and the skills needed? What is the state of this industry?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
So what is the current state of the music industry at the moment? It feels like as punters, it's thriving and it's pumping and that we're going, we're travelling to see Kings of Leon potentially in Mildura. We've had the Foo Fighters in Geelong. Harry Potter tickets are going through the roof. You know, we're getting email after email was of young and up and coming bands out and playing again. But as you said, who's setting these shows up? Who's pulling them down? Where is the staging coming from? All of that stuff that goes into making the live entertainment industry, where are those people at the moment?
And every industry we talk about at the moment, Rochelle, has been talking about the difficulty of finding workers. And we're talking about an industry today where over half the people in the industry were saying, I'm getting ready to leave, just a couple of years ago. So what is happening with this industry, particularly behind the scenes right now?
Well, let's go to Dr. Catherine Strong. She's from RMIT University and was the one that actually commissioned this survey back in 2020 when we were in peak, lockdown 4 at the time. And Catherine, some of those stats that we went through before, which are really confronting, these were the numbers that you discovered. Can you just quickly take us back over what some of the main findings were of this survey in 2020?
Yes, I think that the main thing that came out, as you've already said, is just that the impact of lockdowns and the pandemic was absolutely devastating for the industry. Most people had their work impacted in some way or another, and that's people across the board. So we did talk to musicians. We also spoke to people who are on the management and support side, so people like managers, people who were bookers, PR people, those sorts of things. And we also did speak to people like crew as well. So it was a very wide-ranging scope for the survey that we did. And everybody was being impacted. So people who were the musicians, the people on stage, were hit the hardest, but also obviously crew, the people who were supporting those live acts. So the live sector was the thing that really was hit absolutely in a huge way. And I mean, those sorts of statistics that we came out with give you a bit of an impression of what was going on. But we did talk to people in depth about what they were going through. And what we found was that the emotional impact of what was happening was very intense. The people were basically seeing their livelihoods and their whole idea about what their future was going to look like just being pulled out from under them completely unexpectedly and immediately as well, like everything just shut down so fast. So that emotional impact was something that I think we're probably still going to see the fallout from over the next little while.
Oh, I want to talk to you more about how you work through that and if people feel differently in the now. But you really highlighted an important point before that, Dr. Strong, and that's just how wide and varied the roles are in an industry like this. There are so many specific jobs where I'd imagine there's not a huge community of people working in some of these spaces, but it must be very tight-knit and they're so important to getting the show to go on.
Absolutely, yes. And I think that's right, that the music industry is, in a lot of ways, a community. So people do look after each other. People pull together, and they definitely did during the pandemic. Like one of the things we found was that people were finding really interesting ways to support each other. And some people were doing things like one person we spoke to said he was just calling his friends in the industry like once a week just to talk to them and just to make sure that they were okay. So there was a lot of that sort of innovative and really supportive stuff going on at the time. So many different roles as well. So finding ways to ensure that everybody is finding pathways back is one of the really tricky things that people have been having to deal with.
Dr. Catherine Strong is with you from RMIT University. Let's have a chat to Barry in Blackburn. G'day, Barry. What did you want to say?
Hello, both. Slightly to the side of the music industry, but in the events industry, I was told the other day that a large venue by the edge of the Yarra, which has lots of conferences and displays and things like that, normally you'd be allowed to set up the day before. Now they're basically saying you've got an hour beforehand to set up because people either aren't available or suddenly they disappear. You know, they become ill and they're not there. So it's a real crisis, you know, sort of a side crisis to the whole thing, to the musician, to the musical industry, because these events cost, you know, gazillions of dollars to put on, and you know the act of setting up material on stage, displays.
Can
and
you do it in an
lighting.
Hour, Barry? Well, can you get it done that quickly if you don't have that much time?
I'm no expert, but it's tough. Yeah. I reckon I'm on the periphery of it, so I don't know. But it means it's very tight. Yeah,
I know. And you touched on something there too, in those that may have come back or maybe didn't leave. But then, of course, as so many industries know, as soon as somebody gets COVID or if somebody's isolating, then it knocks those people out as well. Barry, just finally, have you ventured back out there? Are you going and seeing bands or going to the theatre or considering going to a festival or anything like that?
I resisted for a very long time, but yeah, I've gone back and I've been to a couple of shows, but yeah, it's one of those things, you know. I mean, at the moment, there's a pretty good expectation that the show will go on, but you know, for a long time there, you know, you think, well, if the show might go on, but then if it's cancelled, you've got to faff around and go through, you know, getting your money back or rearranging things. So, you know, why bother? And a lot of the people I know sort of took that view. But I suppose where people are saying, you know, oh, I'm going to leave the industry, well, maybe at the time they had to because, you know, they needed to get money. So whether that's a long-term proposition or not, I'm not sure.
Oh, let's examine that. Barry, thank you so much for your call. If you're like Barry and you think you've got something to add to tell us what it's like now that the music industry's back, or even what Barry was alluding to, the corporate events industry too. There's a lot of people working in that. Let's talk about the situation now. Dr. Catherine Strong is from RMIT University and is with us and you on the Conversation Hour today. Catherine Strong, are things different now? What are you looking at now when you examine the state of this industry?
As you said, a lot of stuff is coming back. So people are very excited to be able to get back out into live music spaces and to be able to be together with people experiencing music, which I think was one of those things we discovered, that when you're listening to something online, it's not the same. There is something missing that's just not there when you have that live experience where you're in the same physical space as other people. It's a very specific experience. But I think the thing that needs to be remembered, as you just sort of alluded to as well, the pandemic isn't over. It hasn't gone away.
Yeah, that's right.
So even though things are a lot better, there is still a lot of uncertainty out there in that, you know, all it takes is for the lead singer of the band to come down with COVID and suddenly everything has to be cancelled on a tour that is ongoing. So again, you've got those costs associated with cancellation and still the uncertainty. So it hasn't gone away for people in the industry entirely. Like, it's a lot better than it was, but it's still an ongoing concern. So one of the things we've seen just in the last few days is that a number of peak music industry bodies, including APRA, AMCOS and ARIA, have come out with some things that they want to see from the federal government. So basically it's an election-focused bunch of requests that they put out there. And one of the things they're asking for is something to be put in place that gives touring musicians and other people in the industry an insurance scheme that they can then draw on if they have to keep doing these sorts of cancellations.
It really felt like the industry that was left to the end to get that support. And then when you look at how we bill and how proud we are in this state of the music and the events that we put on, I think there was a real juxtaposition there that a lot of people couldn't get their head around. Let's have a quick chat to Jeff in Bayswater. Jeff, you've called through. Welcome. What did you want to say?
We're a production company in Melbourne here, and we do a lot of work up and down the East Coast. And one of the challenges, you were talking about cancellation of events and the like, one of the challenges that we've also got is finding crew. There is a significant shortage of skilled crew in our industry at the moment.
There was that was something that was highlighted, I think, well and truly over a year ago when we looked at it on this program. And the concern was that mass exodus of skill, you know, that people that have learnt on the job and have done it for decades. In just a moment, Jeff, we're actually going to learn about a new scholarship that's been announced. About $190,000 has been awarded to Crew Care to try and skill up people in the trade to work behind the scenes. Is that something that's needed? Like, do we need to promote this? Do we need more options for people to learn the skill of crewing and to take that seriously as a trade, do you think?
Yeah, look, our industry, and we had this through JobKeeper and everything else, came under the category other. It hasn't been recognised as an industry in what we do as for entertainment. And so I think one thing that needs to happen is that our industry needs to be recognised. Skilling of people behind the scenes is important, but we've got crew that, you know, just even getting positions to get them into rigging courses so that we can upskill them to do some of the other areas of our industry is just trying to get into a course at the moment, and the costing of getting that training is very expensive at the moment too.
And Jeff, just on that, how easy was it to get staff, say, pre-pandemic compared to now?
There was no issue with, you know, we were running multiple tours at the same time. Come that Black Friday, the 13th of March, when everything stopped, basically, we lost about half our staff to the construction industry, and when you haven't toured for 2 years and then you get the opportunity, there is that nervousness of going back out on the road. There, some of the guys have got families now, and that lifestyle has changed. And so it has lots of complications over lots of different areas and lifestyles.
You've
and the
so
whole lot.
You've hit on something, Jeff, because that's what a lot of people said. They said, well, look, it's a grueling industry, and we know that there's huge mental health issues within the live entertainment and touring sector, and we're going to talk about that a little later on. So if you've had men and women then move to construction where they're like, oh, Ryan, at the end of the day, I get to go home to my own bed and see my own family, then it's going to be pretty hard to pull them back to hit the road again, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that's, you know, and that's where we've picked up. What's really exciting for me is that there's the students that have come up through tertiary and all that, and now looking for jobs. They aren't jaded by the industry as well. Whereas and there's some, they're fresh and keen, but it's a matter of getting them up to a skill level that they can work on their own or be able to take on the roles that need to be done. So there is a great future for our industry, but there's a shortage right now, and the training is really important that, yeah, you know, we desperately need some funding so we can actually train these guys.
Jeff, thank you so much for lending your experience to our program. It's been great to pick your brain today.
No worries. Thank you very much for your time.
That's Jeff from Bayswater. I think another caller actually on the line, Rochelle, has got a similar experience. Hugo's on the line from Queenscliff. Hugo, welcome.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
What's your experience?
I've been running festivals and events for nearly 30 years. I guess most people know our business, the Blues Train in Queenscliff, which ran 26 years independently for prior to COVID and had been closed for 2 years. We've seen a mass exodus from the industry. My events and the Blues Train has one foot firmly planted in live music and one foot firmly planted in tourism, of course, as most regional venues do. And none of us thought that JobKeeper would be turned off as 100% as it was. And once the bond between the staff and the employer was broken and the staff went elsewhere, they've transitioned. We asked everyone to pivot and our staff pivoted. Now, are you as a parent going to say to your young son or daughter who's moved to a different industry, whether it's construction or traffic management or whatever, are you going to say, quit that job you've now been in for a year where you are getting paid properly and you are getting award wages and you aren't working till 3 a.m. on tour? Are you going to tell that kid, young person, to quit that job and go back to an industry that is volatile at the best of times, but also proved itself to be under-supported by governments? Now, I just think we're a generation away from rebuilding with our people. And it's not just people, technicians on tour. It's technicians in schools who do the theatres and the productions for our kids. It's the people behind the scenes have moved on, and I think many permanently. And your previous call is right. It will take a generation to rebuild. Because if you've pivoted a year ago, you're not quitting that job to come back to what can be a transient industry, the events industry, and an industry still affected by COVID, of course. But for us, I mean, I literally have had to pull on staff from 10 and 15 years ago who graciously have approached me to come back.
Are you begging them, Hugo, when you ring? Is it like, I can't do this unless I get you?
No, I think because the plight of the Blues Train was very public with GoFundMe campaigns and support, all my old staff, and I always did pay award wages slightly above, and I did always pay people sick leave or paid people properly. I've been really honoured that all the staff came back to help. So I've got staff from decades ago who have moved on to other industries coming back to help, but that's temporary.
I know, Hugo, there's so many points to take from that. Thank you so much. And it's lovely to know that the Blues Train is up and running again. Just finally, Dr. Catherine Strong from RMIT University, it was actually the confronting survey that you did back in 2020 for those of us that aren't in the industry to hear those stark numbers. Just finally, it also said within that survey that those that worked within the sector, they wanted to see change. They wanted to see a shift in how mental health issues were dealt with, working conditions and pay, all of those things that our callers have just raised, which is maybe part of the reason why they're not coming back into the industry. Can that ever change?
Anything can change, I think, but when you're dealing with a culture that has existed for a really long time across all aspects of the music industry, it can take a bit of time, and it does need a real sense of collective will to want to change to get that to happen. But I do think there's some really positive signs in this respect. So I think that one of the things that has happened, that had started to happen, I think, before the pandemic, but that really came out more strongly during the pandemic, was a discussion around these issues. So I think that Hugo put that really well, that people have started to think about the conditions of working in music and to think about how those conditions are impacting employees, to think about how just the insecure nature of the work is something that can become a problem for people over time. We've done other research here where we've looked at people's long-term careers in the music industry and found that a lot of people get to the end of really long and relatively successful careers and still don't have any support, don't have any backup in terms of other careers they can go to or money if they want to retire. So people are left in quite bad situations. I think people are starting to talk about that. And the other really positive thing that started to happen is, I think, really much more sincere discussions about how people are treated in music work. And this isn't just because of the pandemic either. So, for instance, the big scandal that happened last year with Sony Music, where there was a very public discussion about the very bad culture that existed within that organisation and how men, powerful men in that organisation in particular, were treating people absolutely terribly. Those sorts of things that have been coming out as well have meant that I think there are some really high-level discussions happening within the music industry and big research projects also happening, particularly around things like safety in yes. the industry and gender issues in the industry, that I think we can all sort of keep our fingers crossed
Well, that's right. And as we're going to hear from Crew Care in just a moment, who have been awarded some money for a grant for traineeship and scholarships, I wonder whether that's sort of the beginning of formalising that. Catherine, it was a really important survey. I'm so glad that you're still working on it. Please keep us in mind and let us know when the next survey is due to be released so that we can look at some of the work that you're doing. But thanks for your time.
Great. Thanks very much.
That's Dr. Catherine Strong from RMIT University.
It's interesting, isn't it, Rochelle? It seems like an industry that relied quite heavily on being cool and people wanting to be close to, you know, some amazing things. And
live
I imagine there would be
a rock and roll lifestyle if you can't sing or play an instrument. You know?
Exactly, and you're close to it, and you get to see and experience some pretty amazing people at their workplace. But I wonder if the industry has to change, sort of not the image, but what it's offering young people or people
That's right.
who want to come into the industry.
And the skill level behind it and to have that support as well. There's texts here saying, how can a young person sign up as a crew member? Well, hopefully we'll be able to let you know about that a little later. But this text says, I'm a musician and it's great that live music feels like it's coming back. And even though I love playing, I hate playing gigs at the moment. Everyone's unmasked in the crowd. It fills me with anxiety and dread, especially in those small venues as I need to take frequent deep breaths in order to play. Certain restrictions need to have remained, but I feel like that horse has bolted. And this was, went to my first gig in 2 years, got COVID.
And that's, I suppose, a concern for people buying tickets, but also working in the industry as well. Let's welcome in Will Ewing, who is the venue director at the Brunswick Ballroom. Welcome to the conversation now.
Warwick, Rochelle, thanks for having me.
Now,
and thanks for having the conversation first and foremost. It's wonderful to have it.
It's really important, isn't it? And a lot of this actually started too because we heard you with Matt Preston, who we can hear with you there every Saturday morning at 10 a.m., talk about the buzz of the industry being back, you know, the tens of thousands of tickets being purchased and the fact that we're out and about again. Is it that just the average punter thinks that it's up and running and everything's going okay, but underneath, you know, it's what's the saying? You know, ducks on a pond, the legs are going crazy underneath, but on the top, everything seems fine.
Yeah, look, I think it is definitely mixed. And I've spoken to the Evelyn, the Curtain, the Corner, the Northcote Social Club, who we were doing a seminar with those two venues last week. And it is mixed. I mean, you've got, as I quoted on radio with Matt last Saturday, you know, on average there's 40,000 people now a week going to see musical theatre in Melbourne. So I think that's incredible. It's wonderful that it's back. And that's a fact. If you add up the four absolutely knock them out of the park musicals that are on currently, and then the theatre capacities, and I know how they're selling, that's where we're at with those numbers. So that's wonderful, but it's just not the case for every venue. And we are still dealing with cancellations. You know, I was speaking to the Evelyn and they were saying, yeah, there's a cancellation once a week. Now, if you're an event space, you're a gig space, like if there's no band, there is no people. And if there's no people, there's no income. So we're still dealing with that. On a positive note from the ballroom's perspective, you know, this week we've sold more tickets in our short history than any other week. And would you believe this is the longest stint of consistent trade in our venue's history, which is 10 weeks. So, look, there's some positives there. I know, crazy, right? Positives there and green shoots, and we're moving in the right direction. And, you know, to all the punters and music lovers that are going, you know, I'm a bit anxious, but I'm going out. I'm going to see my favourite band. I'm going for it. I applaud you and we love you. But, you know, it's still very difficult for so many venues.
And will the industry, and you know what, rightly so, musicians, crew members, venue owners, managers, you name it, felt like they were forgotten throughout COVID, and in particular throughout the lockdowns, sort of last to receive funding. For many people, they fell into the other category and weren't helped out as much. There's a text here from Zoe in North Coburg saying, you know, around arts funding, it seems to be plenty of money for the Grand Prix, but not for the arts. Does the industry still feel ripped off?
Well, there's been promise of funds, which, you know, every venue currently has applied for a set amount of funds. But, you know, it's yet to come in as we speak. So we're kind of going, okay, great. When is that coming in? But, like, take contractors, for example. You can have in the film industry or incredible techs that might be the best in the industry. They missed out on certain amounts of funds and money early on, mind you, because they might have been the best in the business, but they go and they work for Edinburgh Shine and then they jump over to Fremantle Media as a DOP or whatever it is. So on their track record, it looks like they're jumping around and they're not sustaining a long job, but in fact, they're the best in the business. So they missed out on grants. They missed out on sustained funds. So, yeah, there was instances where I think the arts fell through the cracks, and there was a moment where I went, what political leader is standing up and doing anything about this? And that's when it was really heartwarming to see Tony Burke going to bat for the arts. And I thought, oh, I loved it. But we just really didn't see that from many politicians. So that was a bit disappointing.
Yeah, and it's something that hasn't really been front and centre this election either. Will, thank you. As we said, we can hear you on Saturday mornings with Matt Preston from 10. So thanks for your time.
No worries. And I just did want to say, before I leave, very touched by Hugo's words. And I just wanted to say, Hugo, sending the solidarity. You're doing the right thing. You're a great operator. It'll come back. God love you. Thanks for your time, guys.
Good on you.
Thank you very much, Will. It's interesting hearing that support already even flowing through the program. There's a lot of spiritual support in an industry like
this. There's a text here for Hugo saying, Blues Train is a great institution. It's huge for Queenscliff as well. Thank you to Hugo. Another for Jeff, who just rang in before, saying Jeff is a legend of our industry. And these are people that are just calling our program on today.
I'd love to hear numbers around how difficult it is to get staff. And I actually think our next caller can provide some. Richard's calling from Melbourne on the phone line now. Richard, welcome. What can you tell us about the state of staffing in this industry right now?
Right at the moment, it's really tough. Staff numbers are really low. Pre-COVID, Friday the 13th, the Black Friday, when it all shut down, our company had 460 staff. Now, since we've been back, we've been trying to recruit very hard. We're now built up to just over 150.
Oh, wow. That's a third. You've got a third of the staff you once had.
That's right. And at the same time, our workload has come in sort of, you know, stronger than ever. So it's just a real struggle to keep moving at the moment.
How do you do more work with a third of the staff, Richard?
A lot of it is the staff that we have are just doing longer and longer hours, pushing them harder, and just really concerned about burnout with them at the moment.
Which I guess works against some of the changes that people were wanting to see in the industry. It's, if anything, it's getting harder.
It has become counterproductive for that, certainly.
What do you see as the solution, Richard? What would you like to see happen to help businesses like yours?
A lot of it, particularly during the peak seasons with us, is international students and backpackers and workers. We're not seeing a great deal of them at the moment. So that probably makes up to 20% of sort of the peak workforce load. And that's something that's just not there at this point in time.
I know that there was almost South Australia is looking at reintroducing, you know, what they loosely called, you know, the 10-pound POM again for young people in a certain age bracket to be able to come over here for almost next to nothing to be able to pick up some of that workload. And it sounds like something that would help you, Richard. Richard, thanks so much for your call. We wish you all the best. Let's have a quick chat to Ryan, who's in Essendon. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. What do you want to say?
Okay, so I mainly work with international artists coming to Australia, so I've taken a little bit longer to go back to the busy period, which we're about to jump into for the rest of the year. But what I have noticed coming back into it is all the issues that were raised in some of the previous calls are actually being dealt with in a much better way than they were ever dealt with before. They're being recognised, and I'll give you an example. I was booked to do a regional festival in New South Wales a few weeks ago. It was cancelled due to flooding. Another round of cancellations after COVID. But what they did was, because the new insurance exists for these events, they were able to pay us all, even though we didn't do the event, which was an incredibly rare thing to happen prior to COVID. I also wanted to say that what the guy from the Blues Train said regarding people doing other jobs and not wanting to go back to the music industry, well, I found the opposite. I worked in transport for the majority of the COVID period. And I can tell you, within 2 hours of me walking back into the Forum in Melbourne, I knew exactly that was where I was supposed to be. And it was actually quite an emotional experience coming back to it, because it was a sense of happiness I hadn't experienced for about 2 years. So,
and Ryan, what's the experience been with international artists? You say you work with them. How keen or how has the industry gone about attracting that type of artist back to Australia?
Well, to be honest, the wave hasn't really started yet. We've only had a few select artists get through so far, but there seems to be a massive amount of interest. The next 6 months, you're probably going to see, you know, tours, like about 3 to 4 years worth of tours being packed into 6 months, because there were so many people. Australia's really been put on the map as a touring spot, not just an extra place to go to. So I think there are people just chomping the bit to get back out here.
And I love that regional Victoria's on that map too. Just finally, yeah. Ryan, you said there was an emotional experience, you know, when you walked back in, and that's so lovely and heartwarming to hear. But do you think for a long time people have sort of relied on that? Well, people love to work in this industry. You know, this is something, once you're in it, it's under your skin and it's a part of what you do. Has that sort of just been relied on too much now?
I think to an extent that's always been the case, but I guess because of that, people have never had any trouble getting staff, so it's probably a bit of a double edge there. I do think, though, that a lot of people that do get into it for purely just the partying and the experience and that kind of stuff, that don't last very long.
No, because they realize it's a job,
and it's something that takes up so much more of your life than just what you do on the weekend. So I think, you know, there's two sides to that.
Good on you, Ryan. Thanks so much for calling. Gosh, so many texts on this. This is from Harley in Lara. Hey, guys, I really want to support the industry. I go to as many gigs as possible. 22 gigs booked or attended in 2022 and counting. I love live music. It's the least I could do.
This is The Conversation Hour
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
You're listening to The Conversation Hour. Warwick Long in Shepparton, Rochelle Hunt in Melbourne. We're looking at the music industry and not really the performers, are we, Rochelle?
No.
It's those behind the scenes,
the crew,
jobs in so many different parts of what it takes to put a show to air. What is the conditions like for those workers at the moment, and are they coming back? Because we're hearing constantly about staff shortages, and those who have gone to other industries are staying there.
And also to the skill level that's required and the work and effort that needs to go in to bring through that next generation of workers. We heard that many have gone to the construction industry, but we're also getting texts from people saying, how can I work in this industry? Well, Andrew McKinnon is the director of Crew Care, and Crew Care have just received some new funding for a scholarship. It's around $190,000 to roll out what's been called a pathway to jobs in live music. Andrew, welcome. Is this just the beginning of the training that's needed and the training, I guess the formal training and the recognised training that's needed in this industry?
Yeah, thanks, Rochelle. It really is that. We were very lucky to receive the funding from Creative Victoria, and we're all treating this as a pilot program at the moment. So the idea of the scholarship is to really give those people a leg up. So the RMIT students, the guys and girls and everyone that's working in the crewing companies at the moment that have probably got the skills. They may need a bit of technical knowledge. The students that have the technical knowledge that may need a bit of hands-on experience to get them into a program, to get them straight into jobs in production companies.
And are there enough people wanting to do that at the moment, Andrew?
Yeah. So, look, we think there is. You know, we designed a program back in August and, you know, we're in a very different world than what we are at the moment. One thing we certainly know is that the demand is very high for the production companies to fill those positions. You know, talking to a colleague of mine this morning, you know, they've lost about 30% of their staff from before COVID to now. So, you know, they've got a lot of their senior people back. So a lot of the more experienced technicians in lighting companies, for example, and rigging companies and staging companies, they all went into movies and kind of got by okay and are now returning to the events industry now that it's, you know, live music now that it's back. But it's that, you know, it's that mid-level that's gone, and that's where the skills shortage really is.
We know that when we heard about the report done back in 2020, sort of in the peak of lockdown number four, that people wanted change and change that potentially needed to be addressed before COVID. Does the industry fundamentally need a bit of an overhaul where it comes to, you know, how much you're travelling, to pay, to conditions, to gender equality, all of those things?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, I think from a training perspective, it needs to be addressed, you know, in a similar approach to the way the trades, as you mentioned before. You know, like this training program that we're putting together is something that we've identified. But, you know, there's no one from the government identifying these shortages. And, you know, that really needs to be addressed. I think the issues with fairness in pay are much bigger problems to tackle, and they definitely need to be addressed.
So I suppose then when we look at how important training is, Andrew, is it going to change? Is it going to make people feel wanted by a career and like they have a career path here? Or I'm assuming back in the day it was the kind of industry you just learnt on the job.
Yeah, look, it really is. And, you know, back in the day, you know, when people did learn on the job, the technology was a lot easier. You know, the technical aspect of what people do these days is something you can learn to a point on the job. But, you know, the training aspect of it is really, really important these days.
Well, people are already asking how they can sign up. So I guess the best way for them to do that is to jump on the Crew Cares website, or is it to go to RMIT? What's the best way of them finding out about it?
Yeah, to Crew Care. We've just been awarded the funding and we're just putting the program together at the moment. Okay. So we'll have something up on the website soon of how to apply
for
it.
Watch this space. Yeah.
Exactly,
good on you, Andrew.
Exactly right.
Good to speak with you. Andrew McKinnon, who's the Director of Crew Care. Jenny Moon is the Directress of Moon Mother Productions. Her company runs everything from stages, trucks and gears and has been doing this for over 30 years. Jenny, we've been touching base with you on and off over the last couple of years. How's business at the moment?
Yeah, hi, Michelle. Lovely to be back on. Obviously a lot different to last time we spoke. You know, from January, we've come back really quick. So we've come back in production, which is the live staging, audio, lighting, screen side of the industry, way too fast in January, way too fast, no crew. We're all exhausted now. We're all running to the ground. I think you'll find this across the board with production companies. We don't have a lot of funding to help with the training of staff. We are relying on the things like Crew Care and all those initiatives at the moment. But there is no access to training apart from Crew Care. You can't go through the government training channels for staff because they just don't have anything unless you want an apprenticeship or you want to go to TAFE. and do a course like that. You can't really get in even into RMIT. I'm just investigating at the moment about the audio courses and how we can try and get our people that want to come in the industry through. But at the moment, we can't really get funding. So, for example, I've been adding hours onto my gigs and clients have come back going, why is the labour so dear? And it's like, well, I've added 4-hour training on your site because it's the only way we can do it. There's no funding to train our staff. So we're coming in early and I'm going to use some of those hours to retrain my staff, experienced staff, back into how we do this 2 years
Are people happy to pay that, Jenny?
They are. They're paying it, but they are requiring it on me. And I'm saying, if you don't like that, because there is no other way to get paid to teach my staff and retrain and do OHS and everything else has to be done, go to your local representative and let them know that we're in trouble in this industry around training staff back up into even experienced staff.
Yeah.
You know, we've all lost our skills after 2 years. Most of us have lost a lot of our skills, struggling even just communicating on site, doing the longer hours. We're not used to it physically now.
Yeah, you've got to get match fit.
Hey, Jenny. You're saying it's not just a weekend thing. It's 8 days a week what we do, really. We're on tap all the time in our industry. You know?
Jenny, stay with us because Adrian's in Bayswater and is super busy and he's been holding for ages. And we just want to quickly get your point of view. Adrian, welcome.
How are you today?
Good. What did you want to say?
Now, it's good that the music industry is back in you know, going now, but what about the tour? Like, I work in children's entertainment, and I as well do bumping for shows, supervise, and make sure everything's running on time. But children's entertainment is going out, like, it's going backwards at the moment.
When you say children's entertainment, you mean
as
sort of
in
like shows,
children's
and
shows,
shopping centres and stuff,
shopping centres and things like that, fakes, fairs, festivals as well.
So those things aren't coming back as fast as other events, Adrian. Centres aren't calling.
They're not calling, or if they're calling, they cancel because a lot of the shopping centres are starting to become broke because all the shops are starting to shops left. The shopping centres.
Gosh, that's one industry that I really hadn't thought about. Although I did do a gig with Charlie Silly Pants just recently, I have to say, was a children's entertainer. His pants weren't that silly, I have to say, but he was a very good entertainer. Adrian, thank you. It's a good, it's a good area for us to think about and consider. Just finally, Jenny, before we had a chat to Adrian, how do we get people skilled up in this industry? How do we get it recognised? I mean, is it transferable if you've been a carpenter, for example? Or if you've worked in other areas of technology, how transferable are the skills?
I think some is, you know, some of your site teams and crews are definitely transferable when we use people from other industries who have other skills already within that capacity. For techs, I don't think so. I think, I lost 60% of my senior staff, which is people with 25 plus years experience. Out of my business in lockdown. My juniors have stepped up. I have staff back, but I have lost that experience, and that's the key to this, is without those techs, who a lot have left, a lot have started to come back, we're in trouble because these kids, the younger crew coming out, coming up in production companies, coming out of places like RMIT, audio courses, things like that, they know the stuff, but they don't have the experience. And the experience is, 30 years of travelling internationally, touring, doing audio like I have, where you learn skills, you can troubleshoot on the spot, and you have longevity in your energy, you know how to pace yourself, all those things. So it's training your ears. Mm. Training your ears takes many, many, many years as an audio engineer, let me tell you.
100%. Hey, and Jenny, just on that.
Pick up. Yes.
On that idea, can you take us to that experience in January when you're starting to open up again and you're saying you almost forgot some of the skills you had, you don't have some of the senior staff you once had
it's
as well.
It's making me feel ill.
What was that like? Can you give us an idea or paint a picture of what it was at that time?
Yes, I can. It didn't make me feel ill. Basically, it was running up until now every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday on 7 hours sleep. For me, it's my company, and when crew pull out with COVID or I can't get enough stuff, I have to go out and pick up the pieces. So that's what my last 3-4 months has been like. So I'm extremely exhausted. So are my staff. I've given them all a rest at the moment. It's tricky, yes, because you have a twofold thing. It's where you think you've got your crew that you've taken ages to find, apart plus a couple of good solid ones. Then all of a sudden, 24 hours out,
you've got half your crew back in lockdown.
Just finally, Jenny, are you confident that the industry will rebuild?
Absolutely. And it's going to rebuild probably the best it's ever been. I think it's been a good shake-up. I think there's a lot of stuff that we've realised by being left behind, forgotten about, people not realising our worth, things like that that have now become really apparent. Even me, I had yesterday off. And, you know why?
Out.
Because that's what lockdown does. It goes, I don't need to look after myself. My health and my family are a priority, so I'm taking a day off. Now, these new mindsets are really important.
Oh,
you know, we've
Jenny's...
been on site building stuff and stopped. We were doing Lee Kernaghan over in Murray Bridge, and we just all stopped on site and went, what do we do now? We built the stage, got half the PA, but what... How
sit
do we
down. Put your feet
we
up.
We all had to stop.
Have a cold drink.
And I just went, tools down. Everybody, tools down, stop. Get out of the sun. Have a drink. Here's a fruit platter. Now, let's just discuss where we're at and what we do now. And then when you ring people, it's across the board. You know, your show techs and your big, you know, staging partners, they're all in the same boat going, geez, we just had to stop and go tools down for 10 minutes because we've all forgotten what comes next. We have to go back, get the paperwork
Jenny.
Out. So it's what it is. I think we're going to come back bigger and better.
Well, this is the reason why you're a finalist in the Australian Women in Music Awards. So congratulations on being that finalist. It's wonderful to hear that energy back in your voice. It was so different to the last time we spoke. So it's really wonderful to speak with you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, lovely.
Take care.
Thank you. All right.
See ya.
Good luck. Take care. Bye.
Jenny Moon there, directress of Moon Mother Productions, her company of stages, trucks and gear, 30
sounds
years
so
in the industry.
Was. She sounds so different.
A completely different person. Hear that energy.
I know.
That is amazing.
Oh, it really is. But look, when we talk about, Jenny's probably her first day off and goodness knows how long.
And we've made her work.
And that's it. And that the work ethic, you know, the travelling and the toll that it takes is a big reason why when people left, they thought twice about coming back. Well, Luke O'Connor is the National Mental Health and Wellbeing Manager at Support Act. And Support Act are incredible. They provide all sorts of relief, including financial relief for musicians and those in the performing arts, and were vital over the last couple of years. Luke, when we talk about really taking a good look at the industry and why people may leave, why people may burn out, and how we're going to get them to come back, how do we ensure that the mental health of those working behind the scenes in the live entertainment industry, that part of it has a greater focus?
That's a really good question, and thanks for having me, Michelle and Warwick. It's great to be on air with you today. I think what we saw over the last couple of years of lockdown is that it gave us a great opportunity to reset as an industry and also rethink some of the kind of negative cultures that were kind of permeating music. Some of the things we're trying to tackle at Support Act is how do we create mentally healthier workplaces, and the workplaces of music are different. You know, we obviously have offices, but we also have festivals, studios, tour vans, etc. So how do we get a message out there about where do you go to get help? How do you support your colleague? How do we create a resilient industry so when we have times of crisis like we just did again, that we have the ability to withstand it? I think as Jenny just pointed to, part of the issue being that as an industry, there wasn't a lot of cohesion about how we communicated our message to the broader community about how we needed to be supported as an industry and certainly to government. But over the course of the last couple of years, we've seen the industry come together, work together, kind of break down some of those barriers of competition to really advocate on behalf of the crew, musicians, etc., that are all part of our ecosystem.
What is the level of people looking for help and support like now, say, even compared to during the pandemic?
Yep, so we saw a 300% increase in callers to our Support Act Wellbeing Helpline, which is the national helpline for anyone who works in the music and live performing arts sectors, which was massive. But not just that, we've also just completed some research, which we'll be releasing in a couple of weeks, into the mental wellbeing of people who work in music. And already we can say through that a significant number of people who work in music have been heavily impacted compared to those who work in the general population. Up to over 70% of people in music saying that they're experiencing some kind of psychological distress. A lot of that having to do with complete lack of income, bullying and harassment within workplaces, and just an overall feeling of being let go by society as an industry because of the pandemic. But the other side of that, and I'm sure you're going to get to it, is the positivity that that's brought about as an industry. You know, people really supporting Support Act as a lightning rod for getting the support out to people who needed it the most. And, you know, that's been pretty wonderful to see, us all come together as a community to really, you know, support each other in a way that music in Australia hasn't before.
Do you think it will change? There's a text here. It's quite long. I'll try and read as much of it as I can. It says, I've worked in the industry for 20 years, a lot of experience booking artists, productions, event supply. I lost my job as a major promoter back in March 2020. I understand the issues of all the production companies having with crews, but from a booking agent's point of view, who is the person in the office booking the artists, I've found it incredibly hard to get back in. I find there's no flexibility from employers. They don't seem to read applications or look at genuine skills or work history. Instead, they just get a mate for the job, and I've experienced this firsthand. It feels worse after COVID. When we look at some of the jobs, you know, when we say live entertainment industry, it's just a term that's thrown around, but there are so many different jobs and niche areas of this industry. How long is it going to take to help all of these people, do you think, and to start to rebuild and reframe?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I am not an expert in the macroeconomics of Australia's music economy, but I certainly feel like Support Act, we were able to support 16,000 individual people throughout, or we had to, throughout the pandemic. And thankfully, we did that with some government support. But what that tells me is there's a lot of people that are experiencing the impacts of underemployment or the kind of pitfalls of working in the gig economy. There's really established research around the world that particularly for creators, not musicians and artists, etc., that it's the scarcity of financial security that really drives a high rate of mental illness within our community. I'm sure that's not something that is, you know, going to be fresh news to a lot of ears, but it certainly means that we've got an opportunity now as an industry to go, right, how do we ensure that there is consistency in roles, that there are clear employment pathways, that there's access to well-funded support when people need it at times of crisis, as well as knowing that we are improving the workplaces that people go to work and make them free from bullying and harassment and safe for all.
So positive work there, but still work to do. Luke O'Connor, absolutely, National Mental Health and Wellbeing Manager at Support Act. Thank you so much for joining us on The Conversation Hour today. It's been a really interesting window for me into an industry that's going through a lot right now, even after having gone through so much during the pandemic, Rochelle.
And I guess too, because from a punter's perspective, which is the perspective that most of us has, it does, that vibrancy feels like it's there. Hopefully, like as we heard from Jenny Moon, that that will continue, but that people will want to come into the industry. And if there is anything good to come out of this, it is that those things that need to be changed, that need to be addressed, the funding that needs to be allocated, that those things start to happen.